holding knives. Christy thinks she hears swamp wax far off.
Lori came awake, trembling a little like a frightened fawn, eyes glistening. Ryan knew from previous experience that Dr. Theophilus Tanner wasn't the quietest of men when it came to being roused from sleep. He knelt beside him, cautiously extending his right hand and clamping it across the old man's jaws, holding the mouth shut.
It's Ryan. Keep still and quiet.
Doc jerked and struggled, his hand scrabbling to free himself, but Ryan was far stronger, holding him down on the floor.
Fire blast, Doc. Wake up, will you? Keep quiet. There's danger.
Only when Doc was finally still did Ryan release him. The old man sat up, rubbing his face.
Upon my soul, Mr. Carter, but you have a grip like a poacher's trap. What ails you now?
We've seen men moving around the huts with cold steel in their hands, Doc. And I heard engines, miles off.
JB stood at the window, flattened against the wall, squinting out.
What about Finn? He's with that giant whore.
Where?
Saw big woman and Finn. Go to house with picture of bird on door.
A white cockerel with a red band about its neck. 3 doors down from the long hut where we all danced.
In a couple of minutes, everyone was fully dressed and armed and ready. Ryan once more looked out of the shuttered window, where JB had been keeping watch.
Anything?
No. Thought maybe I heard a noise along the side by the river.
Ryan eased out of the hut, keeping in the dark lake of shadow, and peering into the surrounding forest where the armorer had said he'd heard something. It was difficult to tell, but there could have been the faintest light of a fire, a dim red glow, but he couldn't have sworn to it. JB joined him.
What do you figure?
Get out. I reckon we should make for that township we saw, West Lowellton. This Baron Tamar runs Lafayette. Keep out of that, Phil. I figure we'll lose if we try and fight these Cajuns in the mud. Better we get into some ruins and make them play on our patch.
We go and get Finn?
Yeah. You take Doc and Lori and go get him. I want to see what those bastards are doing by the river. I'll take Christy. Meet you out where the trail narrows. Get to the far side of that and cover the path.
JB nodded and turned to go back inside the hut, then paused.
Chill a big woman?
Yeah.
In short order, Christy joined Ryan, and they began their nocturnal creep. Ryan led the way, with Christy a silent shadow at his heels. There wasn't a light showing in the whole ville, but ahead of them, they now saw that a large fire was lit deep into the curtain of the mangroves. The wind was drifting eastward, toward the ville, so they could smell the scent of the burning wood.
I hear a drum. Muffled, slack kind of noise. Beating slow and even. It's about in time with the heart.
Yeah, I hear it too. Or I feel it anyway. Like it's striking within my body.
Something suddenly scurried away from beneath the toes of his boots, making him jump. It vanished into the river.
Fire blast.
Now they were so close that they heard the crackling of the fire. They also heard an occasional mumbled chanting, rising and falling in the damp air. Ryan stopped so abruptly that Christy nearly bumped into him.
What is it?
Don't like this.
What?
This whole fucking place. The heat, the damp, the fucking mud. That creepy ville with its songs and dances, and all the time, always there's something fucking rotten going on. Since we met, we've been in the cold, high country. That's better somehow. This swamp is fucking evil, girl.
I feel that too. Maybe stronger than you, lover. How's about turning us right around and heading back for the gateway and getting out?
Well, maybe. Let's go see what the Cajuns are doing out here.
Now they were within 50 paces of the blazing bonfire, close enough to make out figures moving in a shuffling ring around it. They were men and women, from what they could see through the dangling fringe of Spanish moss on the trees. The riverbank was only a few yards to their left. Christy pointed ahead and slightly to the right.
Ryan, look.
Someone was standing rock still, leaning against the trunk of a topless sycamore. It was one of the Cajuns who'd asked Christy to dance. A large, squat man, wearing an old plaid shirt torn across both shoulders. He had a long beard, streaked with silver, like a tree seared by lightning. There was enough orange light from the fire to show that he was cradling a blaster. It was a long, old-fashioned musket, just like
the one that killed Hen.
Revenge was one of the sweetest-tasting dishes in all creation to Ryan. But he had been alive long enough to know that it was also a dangerous pleasure. If this was the man who had slaughtered Hennings, then it would be good to ice him, but only if it could be done safely. The drums would drown out the noise of a cautious approach, Ryan realized as he studied the man. It was obviously supposed to be on guard. The stock of the musket, bound with baling wire, rested on the soft earth. There was a machete, similar to Ryan's own steel panga, sheathed on the man's left hip. A smaller knife was strapped to his right knee. Beyond him, the fire was burning brightly, the breeze carrying the scent of bitter spices to them. At his side, Christie looked up at Ryan's face, seeing the orange light flickering across the hard, almost brutal planes of the high cheeks, throwing his good right eye into shadow. The faint gleam of the strong teeth was revealed between parted lips. It was a face of total, cruel concentration. The woman knew that he was considering how best he could murder this Cajun. It showed in every angle of his taut face. Yet it was a face that only an hour or so before she had seen melt into gentle consideration in her lovemaking. The Cajun's name was Henri de la Tour. As he leaned against the bole of the tree, he contemplated the hours to come. Once the rituals were finished, they would collect the outsiders and take them for the new ceremonies. But if the Baron was interested in them, then they must not be unduly harmed. Yet the girl with hair as red as glowing coals in a fire. His head was sunk on his breast, and he lifted it, jerking a hand up in irritation at the feathery touch of an insect near his ear. The movement exposed the side of his neck above the collar of the shirt, uncovered by the long beard.
Merde!
Even to someone who'd spent all of his life in the swamps, the insects could be torture. There had been a woman in Mudong named Jenny, whose skin had carried a subtle odor that was irresistible to the hordes of biting insects around the bayous. Poor Jenny. She'd tried getting help from the local voodoo priests, even gone to Mother Midnight and begged aid against the swarming skein of fluttering flies that always hung around her long hair and face. In the end, Henri recollected, Jenny had been driven insane. She had run screaming into the splashing shallows of the nearest slime hole, tearing great bloody gouges in her face. No one who had watched the frenzy of her thrashing in the gray-brown ooze tried to help her. It hadn't taken long for the sinister caimans, attracted by the disturbance, to slither from the banks. Again there was an insect brushing at his hair, making him twitch with irritation. He moved his head to precisely the right position.
Mon Dieu!
Latour slapped his hand at the point just below the right ear, where the bastard moustique had stung him. It was sharp and painful, where the big carotid artery carried the blood from the aorta to the brain. In the darkness of the forest, the Cajun heard rain pattering on the leaf mold around his worn boots. That was strange, as it wasn't raining. Somehow, it was hard to concentrate on why that should be so peculiar. It was definitely raining. Henri could feel rain soaking through the collar of his shirt on one side, running over his skin. Warm.
Chaud?
He felt his lips move, heard the faint whisper of his own voice, but all of it was happening a long, long way off, happening to someone else. With a labored slowness, he reached up to touch the place where the insect had stung him, feeling for the lump of the bite. It wasn't a lump at all. It was a tiny mouth, set in his throat, pouting lips that intermittently spat blood into the night air. The Cajun's left hand opened, and the musket dropped away, to be caught by Ryan Carter before it could reach the ground. Then the Cajun understood. Through the murky slowness of his fading mind, he knew what was happening. He wanted to shout a warning to the others, busy at